Welcome to Crazy Shit in Real Estate, a weekly podcast where I walk you through some of the wildest, most unbelievable stories you'll hear from the world of real estate. If you like real estate and you love crazy, this is the podcast for you.
And welcome back to the podcast. You're listening to Crazy Shit in Real Estate with your one and only hostess, Lee Brown from North Carolina. And as you know, you're here for the same reason I am. You want to hear things that nobody else has told you before so that you can say, are you serious? And that's what we try to have in every episode. So today I'm excited to bring you a whole new guest, and we've got the first Goosen ever to be on the podcast. Hey, welcome to the show.
G'day. Thanks for having me.
Okay, I like how you saved your g'day until you got to be recorded, because you know you're showing off the Crocodile Dundee there, Aaron. So tell our listeners who you are, how you came to be on the show, what do you do related to real estate, where you're located, any of those little tidbits they might need to know.
Sure. So just to break it down, originally from Australia, moved to the United States in 2012. I came for two reasons. One was the love for New York City, and the other one was the love for my wife. In the last 7 years, I've gone from buying zero real estate to now controlling about $150 million worth of U.S. multifamily commercial real estate.
Okay, so obviously that's impressive to a lot of people because it's a big dollar amount, but you didn't come from big buckets of money, right? You're not like a trust fund baby with a daddy who gave you a lot of money.
No, I burnt the bridges. I quit my job in Australia, moved halfway across the world to give it a crack. You know, to have a go here in the United States and trying to chase my American dream. And I rocked up here without a job, didn't go to university here, didn't have a network, and I had about 30 grand. I was able to use that 30 grand to buy my first ever property in upstate New York. And so that got me off to the races.
All right, so let me start you there. So you had not a ton of equity, and we have this conversation with buyers all the time. They think they need cash to invest in real estate, and you need a little bit, but you've got to think about the power of leverage. And obviously, you did that really well with your 30 grand. So how did you identify that first property? And then the second half of this question, which you can answer as you go or you can come back to it, is now that you are Mr. Experience with the portfolio, when you look back at that first investment, would you change anything about either the questions you asked or the property you selected?
I bought a $38,000 property, so I had to use a bit of credit card debt with my actual equity. I went and bought a triplex in upstate New York. And my big rule thing here was when I first moved to the United States, the barriers to entry here compared to my home country in Australia is so much lower. I was renting to Section 8 housing, but the problem was it wasn't that great. The tenant profile that I was renting to, on paper, it looks good. I was supposed to cash flow for the first 6 months. That happened. But then after that, we had a drive-by shooting, and we had just a whole bunch of issues. And what I really learned was that if I'm going to get into this sort of lower-end Section 8 housing, I need to buy more if you're going to enter that market. So when I say more, I'm really like 5 to 6, 7, 8 types of houses in order to create a little portfolio, because my property manager wasn't giving it a lot of attention, given that I only had one of them and it was only worth $38,000. So looking back to your second part of the question is like, I had to get deal number one done to get to the $150 million that I currently control, but I might've done it a little slightly different way. It was a real eye opener, but I really enjoyed all my experiences over the time of the last 7 years, and I wouldn't give everything up.
All right. So what would you do differently of that first purchase? Was it be related to the property that you bought, or how you financed it, or how you picked a property manager, or all the above?
I think the big thing was, if I'm going to go into that low end of the market, I needed to have more. You know, so when I say more, I needed to, instead of buy one, I might have needed to buy three or four. So I could just go to a property manager and say, hey, I've got a small portfolio. I can diversify my risk over not just one asset, but over 4 or 5. But I didn't have that money up front. And so I just had to get started, get my feet wet, as they say, and get going.
So I have to ask, did you have a realtor when you bought that first property, or did you do it only on your own?
No, I did. I had a realtor, and I identified probably about 6 to 7 different properties. And for your listeners out there, my real goal was to get cash flow, you know, to try and, you know, supplement my daily income, or my weekly income, my W-2 job. And that was really my goal. And so when I first came to the United States, I was like, wow, I can buy a property for $38,000. And on paper, it's going to cash flow about $700 a month. I was like, oh my gosh, that is nuts, because in Australia, the barriers to entry are minimum $250,000 and you don't cash flow. Yeah, really coming here was just like the blinders were off, the blinkers were off, whatever you want to call it, and just dive straight in.
Okay, Reed, so let's talk about that for a second. As realtors, we get investors that call us all the time, and primarily it's the, I want to be an investor. There's two different ways you can look at investment real estate. One is cash flow, which you're talking about, which is money in your pocket today. And the other one is to buy for equity advancement, which might be what you have to do in Australia, because we all know they're not making any more dirt and equity does go up over time, but it's two different perspectives. And so my question for you is, now that you've built a portfolio and obviously you're more financially secure than you were when you started, do you still buy for cash flow or do you buy for equity, or is it some kind of a mix? What's your target?
Mix. So I've graduated into the commercial real estate realm where I can get cash flow, but also can force appreciation. I don't want to get too jargony with your listeners, but essentially we buy large apartment buildings. It does cash flow from day one, but we go in and make that cash flow better. So we might go into each unit as a tenant moves out, and we might put $5,000 to $10,000 in it. For that, we can get probably $100, $150 rental bump. And over, say, 80 to 100 units over a period of 2 years, we can force the appreciation as well as increase the cash flow.
And I think that's an underestimated point of investment real estate, because we see a lot of investors who stop maintaining, they stop upgrading because they can get a little lazy with easy cash flow, especially in a market like we're in right now. We're recording this in 2019 where rents keep moving up and there's a lack of inventory. So a lot of our investors have gotten lazy because the money's coming in. But as you talk about, you're going to get more rent when you've got a nicer unit. And then in a couple of years when the markets go sideways, because they do, it's cyclical, the units that are upgraded and the buildings that have been cared for will absolutely pull still better tenants. They get better rents and they're worth more. I think more investors should remember this in the good times.
Yeah, no, 100%. And we always look for value adds. We always want to look for properties where the current in-place market rent is less than what the comps are. And so what are the competition, in the local area? And then in 5 to 7 or 8 years time, it might be a value add property for someone else. So we might go and sell it. So it's sort of like, as you talk about cyclical, we definitely look for an exit where we've done the work on the front, we've maintained it over, 5 to 7 years time. But then when we come to sell it in 5 or 7 years time, it might be a value add for someone else.
So what do you think about the trends in the apartment market now that you're buying the big commercial buildings in the Charlotte area where I'm located? We're seeing a lot of these value adds that you're mentioning have gone from the traditional things you might see at a nice complex, which would be a pool and maybe a dog park. And now we're seeing cocktail hours and event managers. And these are not even like Manhattan concierge buildings. These are your average apartment complexes. And they've got granite and stainless steel, and they're really jacking the level of amenities. Do you see that happening in your markets? And do you think it's sustainable?
To your first question, yes. I do see it across the country. It is something that you have to differentiate yourself between all the competition. As more apartments are coming online. Do I think it's sustainable? I think it has to be, because the way in which we're living, we're definitely getting smaller in terms of our unit sizes. And so we definitely want to lean into the amenities, having a little bit extra like a cocktail hour or nice gym or a pool or rooftop deck. That's going to get you that little bit more rent than, say, the apartment down the road.
Looking at your future, now that you've got all these buildings, do you see yourself using your existing portfolio as your collateral, or do you use your cash flow to down payment on your new buildings? How do you take what you've built and take it to the next step?
We raise capital from other investors, and they help us buy more and more deals. So we don't actually collateralize each deal to another deal, if that makes sense.
Okay.
So we only go deal by deal. We bootstrap that deal, raise the capital, close on it, and then go on to deal number 2, 3, 4, 5, 6.
So do you have partners in this venture, or is it all just you and your wife?
Nope. I've got my business partner who lives in Austin, Texas. And then we have typically between 30 to 100 investors per deal, depending on how much equity we need to raise.
Okay, so I got to ask a question about that. So first of all, where do you find 30 to 100 investors? And second of all, how do you structure it so that you're safe from one of them being some crazy asshole who wants to upend a property when they go through the divorce from hell?
The way in which I find my investors, I have a podcast myself. I am trying to be a thought leader. I've been doing this for a decade, so I'm getting referrals from other investors. The second part of the question is how we structure it. So we will go in there and we will create an LLC, and each investor will own a limited partnership or a limited share in that particular LLC. If anything does go wrong, we have the legal documentation in terms of how we do conflict resolution with any of the limited partners, and we'll ultimately decide if someone is kicking up a stink, we can go and pay them out and they can go on their merry way, or we can try and resolve it over a table or, you know, coffee, beer, whatever it is, and try and understand what their gripe is with the investment or their personal issue.
So pay attention, people. Anytime you hear somebody talking about real estate investing, if they never, ever mention structures that involve lawyers and financial people, then you're watching way too much Carlton Sheets on late night TV. And you got to think about this. When you're investing in real estate, even if you're a first-time investor with your first property, you're dealing in a very legal territory and a very financially and tax-specific territory. So you need a team, whether it's the attorney that you already know, or you call your realtor and ask them who they have, the financial advisor you already have, or you call your realtor and find out who they have, because your team needs to understand real estate because it's a different kind of investment, especially when you're talking about rental properties, because then you're dealing with tenant landlord law in addition to the possibly crazy partner that you're going to have to buy out of your unit. So before you buy that first house, know who your attorney is, know your tax advisor. And then as you're looking for that realtor on that first property, you don't call your best friend's buddy from the golf course unless they know investment real estate. So y'all, you've got to ask better questions, because investment real estate, as you can already hear from listening here, is different than traditional, I love this house real estate. And Reed can tell you that's probably one of the biggest lessons he had to learn, is going from a regular person standpoint to looking at this from a 30,000 foot view. Because wouldn't you agree that when you start to build a portfolio, you start looking at markets differently and you start looking at economics differently. And in fact, you look at property rights differently.
100%. The team that you have on your side is going to make you successful. You've just mentioned all the right people, attorneys, right brokers. You're going to have your right debt person involved so they can give you the best leverage for the property. Obviously, the best business partners. I've been in partnerships where it didn't work out. And so, you know, we've got to go scrape your knees and get up back on the horse and do it again and learn from those mistakes, and then make sure you're not repeating those in the future.
Or learn from people who've already made mistakes and are willing to let you learn. So, Reed, tell our listeners where they can find your podcast, how they can subscribe to it, and how they can reach out to you if they are interested in learning more about what you do.
Head over to reedgoossens.com. That's reedgoossens.com. And you can subscribe on iTunes or wherever you podcast to Investing in the US, and search my name, and you can check out my books online, and hope to provide some value to your listeners.
And y'all didn't write any of that down, or you were listening to the accent. It's okay, because all of the links are in the show notes for this episode. So just click through, follow what Reed's doing, listen to his podcast, because frankly, y'all, this stuff is accessible to most of you if you'll just take the bull by the horns and do it, but don't do it by yourself. Let us who are doing it help give you some good advice, because we love sharing where we've screwed up, just like we love sharing successes. Reed, thank you for coming on the podcast and sharing some of your story.
My pleasure.
All right, y'all. If you're a realtor, broker, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular person who's dealt in real estate in some way, shape, or form, and you'd like to be featured on the podcast, hit me up at Lee Brown on Twitter or any of the social networks. Otherwise, we will see you next time. If you are listening to this episode and you need to tell us something about your crazy life in or around real estate, then tweet me at Lee Brown or reach me on any of the social networks. That's if you're a broker, realtor, investor, inspector, lender, or just a regular normal human being who happens to have dealt in real estate. Subscribe for more episodes. And as always, we are thrilled that you joined us for some crazy shit in real estate. See you next time.